Hi everyone, Dave Biddle here. Got a great show for you today with Steve Hellwagon. Football is almost here, my friends. 2 weeks from today is all of Ohio State's obligations at Big Ten Media Days, exactly 2 weeks from today. And the week after that, camp kicks off. So football is going to be here before we know it. We're going to get into that. What we're most looking forward to from Big Ten Media Days. Is Ward Manuel actually going to survive at Michigan? I would say no, but we're going to get into that on today's show as well. We're going to talk some David Gabriel George, who's going to make his decision exactly 1 week from today. Is he leaning Tennessee's way, or are the Buckeyes going to get him? We're going to get into all of that and much more. I'll talk to you guys soon. Good morning, Bucknutters. Welcome to the Bucknuts Morning 5 here on Wednesday, July 15th, 2026. I am Dave Biddle, very happy joined by Steve Hellwagon, who is in Augusta, Georgia, covering a basketball tournament. Steve, what's the bets? It's the Peach Jam?
Yes, exciting. The Nike Peach Jam, my first ever time here for this, the big Nike summertime event. And probably 10 or 15 Ohio State targets at this event, another 10 or 15 up the road in Rock Hill, South Carolina for the Adidas Palmetto Road Championship. I'll be up there Thursday. I assume I'll be bumping into the Ohio State coaches up there. They're able to get out on the road Thursday through Sunday. And trying to get eyes on all the top players. And the guy that I saw yesterday and did the story on, Dave, was DeMarcus Henry, national top five player from Arizona Compass Prep. Everybody knows he is the brother of Chris Henry Jr., the Ohio State wide receiver. And Ohio State is in his final top eight, along with just about all the blue bloods, plus Louisville, BYU, and Arkansas. So, yeah, it's big times down here. I asked him about Chris Henry Jr. He said his brother is determined to be the top freshman in the country. So that's music to the ears of Ohio State football fans everywhere that Chris Henry Jr. is bound and determined to follow the footsteps of one Jeremiah Smith, his beloved teammate.
I love Chris Henry Jr.'s attitude, his work ethic, and having a guy like Jeremiah Smith couldn't be any better for Chris Henry Jr. When you see the best player on the team is the hardest working player on the team, that could not send a better message. So, and Chris Henry Jr. sees that, you know, he's trying to emulate, you know, what JJ does. No one's going to outwork JJ, but Chris is trying. I love his attitude. He didn't come in here like, oh, I'm five-star Chris Henry Jr. I can just do what I want. No, that's not his attitude at all. So I love it. Much like JJ didn't come in with that attitude, the exact opposite attitude. And speaking of football, my friends, it's almost here. I mean, think about it. Like, in exactly a week, this doesn't really have mean football is almost here, but still, in exactly a week, DGG, David Gabriel George, is going to make his decision, at least announce it. We're going to talk about that in a minute. In exactly 2 weeks, all of Ohio State's obligations of Big Ten Media Days are happening. Exactly 2 weeks from today. So it's going to be here before we know it. And then the week after that, camp kicks off. So football is going to be here before we know it. All right, a lot to get into. We're going to talk about Ward Manuel, the latest on him. He still has his job for now, guys, but there is something interesting broke last night. We're going to talk about Edric Houston. We're getting some good reports on Edric Houston. I love hearing that. Let's start with DGG, though. Tom Lloyd did a piece yesterday. He quoted our Garrick Hodge, quoted a national writer. They both said if they had to pick right now, they would say Ohio State for DGG. Tom Lloyd picked Tennessee. Ryan Callahan, who does a great job for our Tennessee site, picked Tennessee. If I had to bet right now, Steve, I hate to say this, I would guess Tennessee, but it's really close. I think DGG is torn. What's kind of your vibe here? I know we're just spitballing. Nobody knows. What's kind of your vibe, Steve?
Well, there's a lot of dynamics to this, and this is kind of what I think. I think Tennessee is in a posture where they need to make a splash, and they need to get a great player on their roster that they can build around, whereas Ohio State, yes, he'd be another great player in this orbit, but they already have the nation's number one overall player with what? DJ Jacobs, is that right? The defensive end. So, You know, Ohio State is used to signing top of the line players and fitting them into their salary cap. They did it with Jeremiah Smith, and that worked seamlessly as they won the national championship that season. And yet they don't want to upset the apple cart too much to where a guy who is in the plans and has been at Ohio State for 3 or 4 years is making infinitely less money than this hotshot freshman who just showed up, who hasn't done anything yet. So it's kind of, you know, how do you balance all of that and maintain brotherhood and culture and, you know, without looking to the guy in the cubicle next to me and saying, you're making what? You know, so it's really difficult, I think, for Mark Pantone and Ryan Day and to reconcile this. But I think Carlos Lachlan has pulled out every last stop with this to avail himself to David Gabriel Georges and his family. And I think that if they don't get him, it's not for lack of trying. It's not for lack of money. It's just, you know, Tennessee probably just backed up the Brinks truck and decided this is our hill that we have to stand on, and we have to way outbid whatever Ohio State can do for this kid. So again, I don't know any specific numbers. I don't know. I mean, you hear a lot of things rumored and different things, but I kind of liken this to what Cincinnati basketball had to do with Cam Mercer, the kid from down there at Princeton. They needed a splash. And they paid several million dollars to get Cam Mercer, a 2027 prospect from down there at Princeton High School. And Ohio State and Jake Diebler had offered him before his freshman year, before he'd even played a high school game, first major college team to offer him, even ahead of Cincinnati. And yet he's going to Cincinnati because Cincinnati is paying all of his bills for a very, very long time. So, you know, I don't know what to say about whether who stands where in terms of the bidding, but Ohio State has done everything they can do. And, you know, you think about it, depth chart wise, he would come in theoretically. Bo Jackson would be back for his third year as the starter next year. And, you know, maybe Isaiah West would still be there and some of these other guys, but, you know, the it would be wide open for him to kind of take over that position, I guess, as Jackson kind of winds down and he kind of winds up. So that might be the way to look at it.
All right, let's look at the latest with Ward Manuel. He still has his job. There's going to be a board of trustees or whatever they call their board of trustees up there. They're going to
Regents, maybe. I think it's
the Regents. Board of Regents. There you go. Yeah, the board of Regents is going to have a meeting up in Traverse City tomorrow. That doesn't mean that he's going to get fired tomorrow, but here's the latest. Here's the Wall Street Journal's now involved. You know, when you got like the Wall Street Journal writing like football stories, it's like, it's kind of crossed over. Here's the latest, my friends. There is proof that Ward Manuel knew in 2024, before Sharon Moore's first game as head coach at Michigan, there was a handwritten note that Ward Manuel said, I told him she, meaning Paige Shriver, his former mistress, she could not come on the road with him. He's like, I told him she could not come on the road with him. Ward's on the record many times saying he knew nothing about the whole Sharon Paige thing until 2025. And now there's evidence he knew in 2024. So if he wasn't already on his way out, I have to imagine he is now. But he's also the Teflon Don. I don't know how he still has his job now, let alone if he's going to have it tomorrow. But that's the latest. Last night, the Wall Street Journal published a story that with proof, and somebody at Michigan backed it up, a source at Michigan. So they have proof that Ward Manuel actually knew about all this in 2024. There's been all kinds of other stuff, too. There's been so much stuff there. I mean, it's just been one thing after another. So we'll see. But that's the latest with Ward Manuel. What do you think, Steve?
Well, as my daughter and I, we tease each other all the time. I said the expression that I live by is, what a tangled web we weave when at first we attempt to deceive. And so, you know, there's been one report out there that they had the law firm that they paid $11 million American dollars to come in and investigate their athletic department, had them do an oral briefing because they don't want any physical record of what the investigation said. And if I was a taxpayer in the state of Michigan, to pay $11 million just to have a oral report presented without all of the, you know, facts and details. And there's going to be lawsuits that come out of this, I'm sure. The whole thing reeks to high heaven, and the place needs an enema. And I think it's gotten it to an extent. I think Ward's the last one that needs to be, the last rat that needs to be chased off the sinking ship. And sinking ship's probably not the right way to put it. I think that they held on to Boynton as the basketball coach after Dusty May left. And they brought in Kyle Whittingham, who's in his 60s, to be the coach of the football team after he'd essentially retired from Utah. And my take in both cases is those guys are there to kind of stabilize the patient, you know, just make sure that we have sinus breathing, I guess. I mean, they're coming off a national championship season in basketball, and I don't think they're going to be, you know, up in that realm again. They lost so much great firepower off that team. I was just asked this by one of our best supporters last night in my chat. Do you think this signals a downturn coming from Michigan? I said, no, the sooner they root out all the old and replace them with new and, you know, try and do things on the straight and narrow. I think as long as they're able to pay players, just like Ohio State, they're going to get players. So I don't think it's going to have an adverse effect on the field beyond maybe this year. There's a little bit of stench there, but I think that and neither program is really positioned to play for a national championship this coming season. I mean, the football team would have to make a quantum leap from what we saw last November up there in Ann Arbor for them to be able to participate at the highest level in the Big Ten, the nation. But I think over time they'll get it stabilized. Eventually, Whittingham will turn that thing over to whoever the next shining knight is that's going to come in and put them back, you know, in the championship hunt. But I just short term pain, long term, they're going to be Michigan again sooner rather than later.
Steve, you're going to miss the AC/DC concert tonight at Ohio Stadium.
Surprise. Oh, no.
Yeah. Got a lot of people in the chat that are going. I know.
Go early. You know, I asked our friend, the athletic director, Ross Bjork, off the record. I asked him at our little tete-a-tete, what happened with that Bruno Mars concert and why was that such a screwed up mess? And it was a work day and it did rain and you had a shift change at the hospital. And all of that conspired to having Bruno Mars fans basically stuck on 315 while he was put your picky finger, you know, to the moon or whatever his big song is there. He was out there singing at the stadium and people were having to roll down the windows of their car to hear it. So I said, you know, you can't kill the golden goose of having these $10 to $15 million concert events at Ohio Stadium by not allowing people to get to Ohio Stadium to attend the event. And the ever shrewd Ross Bjork just kind of shook his head and said, yeah, you got us on that one. Yep. Yeah, that's true. So
that's going to be
good luck.
I'm not going to be there either. I wish I was.
Say but head out now and stake out a good parking spot. And that way you're there. So before all the shit hits the fan on 315 later this afternoon.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a hot one too. It's gonna be
a hot football one. Games and can't do a concert, Dave. What is this? What's going on? Of course, those happen on Saturday, which is not a work day. So,
very true. I bet it's gonna be awesome tonight. All right. Moving right along. So, Edrick Houston. I'm hearing really good things about Edrick Houston. We did a piece in the Boarding House yesterday from a source. Bobby Carpenter had Edrick on his podcast. Steel Chambers has taken over for Anthony Schlegel as Bobby's co-host because Schlegel is a little busy being one of the strength coaches at Ohio State. They talked about that. I'm hearing really good things about Edrick Houston. Like, I think this might be the year, Steve, where he like shows why he was a five-star recruit. He's putting in the work. He's over 300 pounds. He's quicker than ever, stronger than ever. His attitude is great. I think Edrick's going to be that three tech that can, you know, get some pressure on the quarterback. That's if you can get pressure from the inside, because they're going to get pressure from the edges. You can get some pressure from your three tech. That's huge, as you know. So I'm hearing good things about Edrick Houston. I'm excited about him.
Yeah, I think last year, he was injured early in the preseason camp, and I don't think he really found himself until midway through the year. And Taiwan Malone also came on and played some of his best football there in the first half of last season. That kind of curtailed the amount of plays that Edric Houston was able to play until he was completely 100%. And he just kind of scratched the surface on what he's able to do last year. They obviously lose Caden McDonald, who was an All-American, their first All-American defensive tackle, all the way back to your guy, Dayton's own and Cincinnati Bengals number one overall draft pick, Dan Big Daddy Wilkinson, way back in 1993, was the last All-American interior defensive lineman that Ohio State has had. So they're going to miss Caden McDonald, and they need Edric Houston and James Smith and, all those guys that they brought in to really, really represent and play great football up front, because football is won up front, and it is won basically from the middle out and from the front back. And there's no position more integral to all of that than the defensive tackle, as we saw last year with Caden McDonald. He just set the tone for that entire defense, I thought. And he didn't get credit for a lot of those tackles. Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese did, and Caleb Downs, but the play was made up front by Caden McDonald, either collapsing a pocket or getting an arm on a runner going through the hole, all those things. Just great defensive tackle play. And Edric Houston, he can be part of the solution. I have no doubt about that. He just oozes ability, Dave. They've just got to get it out of him this year. Contract year for Edric Houston. Go get him, bud.
That's right. He's planning on graduating in 3 years. He said, just in case I leave after this next year, he wants
That's
to make sure
great.
he has a
That's
degree.
great.
So he's got everything about Edric Houston. He's got positive momentum in his life, as Urban would say. He's got a lot
That's
of positive
wonderful.
momentum in his life.
I need some positive momentum in my life, Dave. When's that going to happen?
I tell you what, well, if you were back here, we'd get some scalp tickets when we go to AC/DC. But you and I
There
will be in
you go.
Chicago in 2 weeks from right
I
now.
know that's going to be positive momentum.
2 weeks from right now, positive momentum. Yeah, with the Windy City. We're going to be doing the Bucknuts Morning Five like 2 weeks from right now in Chicago. Heck yeah. Well, maybe we'll pre-record it since we have to get down there early for media days. Again, guys, like media days is a 3 day event. It's July 28th through the 30th, but all of Ohio State stuff is on the 29th. Wednesday, the 29th, 2 weeks from today, all of Ohio State stuff. Ryan Day, Jalen McClain, Jeremiah Smith, and Julian Sain. Speaking of the Buckeyes offense, so yesterday Dane Brugler released his draft eligible wide receiver rankings, and to no surprise, he has Jeremiah Smith number one. That wasn't the notable thing, Steve. The notable thing was that Dane Brugler says he thinks when he gives his final grade for Jeremiah Smith, it's going to be the highest grade ever for a wide receiver, and he's been doing it for 2 decades.
Yeah,
So that was
the
interesting.
only thing that I can think, the only two things that I think you can hold against Jeremiah Smith was he dropped the very first pass they ever threw to him in his very first game.
That's right.
And then he failed to block that dude here in the Miami game. And boy, oh boy, did that set off a chain of events unlike anything that we've ever seen before.
I still think that was a bad play. They threw that stupid wide receiver screen early in the game, and it looked like Miami had like a beat on it, and they did it again.
They did it
I don't
again.
put that on JJ. That was just a terrible play call.
Yeah, I didn't like
Julian's
that
got
either.
to realize, even though that was a bad play call, Julian's got to realize, no, that DB's cheating up. I just got to throw it away. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, everybody screwed up. Bad play, bad throw, bad no block by Jeremiah.
Yeah.
I still think
Everything else the
they would
guy
have won the
does,
game. They would have won the game if they didn't have that
yeah,
stupid
everything else
pick
he
six.
touches turns to gold. So he's just the things he did in that playoff against Tennessee, against Oregon, Texas. He was kind of held in check a little bit against Texas, but then the game clinching play against Notre Dame, the national championship clinching play on third down, that'll live in infamy. So in good infamy, not bad infamy. So
That's
yeah.
right. That's right. That's right. All right. But another thing that was interesting about this piece that Brugler wrote was that he'd also had a ranking of fourth year wide receivers, because his top five are all like guys that are entering their third year, like Jeremiah Smith. A couple of guys from Indiana as well, like Charlie Becker and the transfer they got from Michigan State, Marsh. They were 3 and 4 on the list, but Jeremiah was number one. But he also had a ranking of fourth-year wide receivers. And here's what was interesting. Devin McCune was 9th in the country, according to Brugler. He also had Brandon Ennis on the list. He had Ennis 15th. Again, these are just the fourth-year guys who actually now have an extra year if they want. Like, Brandon Ennis could come back next year because of the 5-for-5 rule. Devin McCune now could come back next year because of the 5-for-5 rule. But I found that interesting, Steve, that he had Devin McCune so high. I tell you what, though, man, I shouldn't be surprised. That kid looked really good in the spring to me. And his film, when you watch his highlights at UT San Antonio, with all disclaimers that it was UT San Antonio, he looks good. And Brugler likes him, man. Number 9, a fourth-year wide receiver in the country. That's good business right there. I think him and Brandon Ennis are both going to be a nice compliment to Jeremiah Smith. Yeah. And then they saw Chris Hedges Jr., all these guys.
Yeah, I'll just throw in on McCuen. You know, his stats showed that he was very consistent, and he was also at times a big playmaker. He was used in an array of ways, I think, at Texas San Antonio. His versatility as a wide receiver, to me, is as good as his productivity. And he was consistent. So we'll say, okay, level of play. I think it's Sun Belt. If I want to say, I think it's Sun Belt. I don't know. Texas, San Antonio. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't think they're American. I think that they are, I think Sun Belt. So, which is pretty good football. Sun Belt has had some really, really good teams, obviously, here in recent years.
They're in the American? Yeah.
Okay. American is almost Power Four. You know, it's probably the next one down. And again, they've had some really good teams as well. So, I know just a little bit more about him, maybe than the rank and file, you know, Bucknut. And I just think that he is primed to jump off at this level this year. And you also have Parker, the wide receiver coming from LSU as well, who, is coming with Cortez Hankton. You know, Hankton's going to push him to the moon as well because he's his guy. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. This offense, I've seen some tweets and different things, how they're going to average 40 points a game and different things like that. And, boy, you know, when you're unstoppable on offense, that really does – help your defense. You know, it pins the other team back. They're starting on their own 25 every time. And yeah, it impacts the entire game of football if you can convert third downs and put the ball in the end zone, in the red zone.
There's so many questions I'm like putting together for media days. Like, I'm so curious about like a lot of different things. Like, I definitely want to ask Ryan Day about the impact Arthur Smith is going to make on the offense, and just maybe they're not going to give away any secrets or stuff like that, but I'm going to ask Julian about that. JJ, just what kind of impact can Arthur Smith have? Because I think, Steve, again, I always say this, the great thing about sports is we will find out. We're going to find out soon.
It all comes out in the wash.
I think this is going to be like, people are going to look back and be like, that was what was missing, was they needed a offensive coordinator that's experienced. They could come in, allow Ryan Day to take a step back. Ryan's still going to be involved in the offense. Let him be more of a CEO. I think he's going to be a major upgrade over Brian Hartline as an offensive coordinator. So that's the main thing I want to hear. And then Jalen McClain's going to be great, talking about Matty P and everything he's adding to the defense. But that's the thing I'm most curious about, is hearing what the guys say about the impact that they expect to receive from Arthur Smith.
You know, I'm excited about that as well, to just see what footprints or, you know, fingerprints he puts on the offense and how it looks and feels differently. I think you had the feel 2 years ago with Chip Kelly that, you know, in the first quarter they would run this play and then they would come back to it with a wrinkle in the second quarter, and then they would build off of that in the third and fourth quarter. And, you know, some of the games, the Oregon game that he called in the Rose Bowl is, you know, that's going to go to the Louvre. I think that is one of the all-timers. And if Arthur Smith can get Ohio State back to, you know, A leads to B, which leads to C, which leads to TD, you know, so it's like that's what offensive football is supposed to look like. You attack the field horizontally and vertically, and you know, you've got all the weapons to do it. Theoretically, your offensive line, when they figure out who that five-man unit is across there, is going to be one of the best in college football. like it always is. And I just think what we saw at the end of last year is going to be considered an anomaly. And I think that this team's going to be back up there. I wanted to throw in one thing. One of the guys on Twitter posted like the top five Big Ten games of the year and had Oregon Washington as one of them, which, you know, that's throwing Washington a little bit of a bone there. I think Ohio State USC should be on that list. There were three Ohio State games on the list, which were Oregon, Indiana, and Michigan. But to me, I think Ohio State USC should be on that list instead of Oregon, Washington. But, you know, that's just a minor complaint, I guess.
Yeah, throwing a bone to Washington there. I do think Washington's going to be good this year. Like, yeah, they were good last year.
Quarterback's back.
Exactly. And I was wondering how the locker room would react to him. They've embraced him. They get it. He seems like a good kid. All of a sudden, it was probably his agent. LSU offered him like a bunch of money. He was going to go take it. And he's back. It sounds like everything is all good there. Damon Williams. I think Washington's going to be even better than what they were last year.
For 20 minutes, he thought about it. He put his name in the portal, and then they're like, whoa, like, bro.
We're going to sue you.
What do you need? We got it right here.
You signed this contract like 2 days ago. We're going to sue you if you go to LSU. He's like, okay, I'll come back. Man,
how about that? Old Miss is like, we need our money from those LSU guys who, you know, took money and then went from Old Miss and then went to LSU. We need our money back. We need our buyout, you know. That's going to get sticky ugly, isn't it?
How about Cincinnati? Cincinnati's suing Brendan Sorsby still. That they have not dropped that lawsuit yet. And now there's talk that Cincinnati knew that he was gambling. Texas Tech's firing at Cincinnati, saying, oh, Cincinnati was the one that turned us in. There's all kinds of rumors out there. I tell you what, it's a freaking soap opera right now, college football. We're waiting for the games to begin because it's a soap opera all around. The Sorsby stuff was so interesting, man. I'd never in a million years thought that would be the result. I thought there was a chance that like something would happen where he couldn't play, and I didn't expect it to go down the way it did. I never thought it would be that he just would be sitting out football completely this year. Good on the NFL. I didn't think the NFL would have the backbone to do that. Good on them to be like, no, we're not doing a supplemental draft for this dude. He can sit out a year and join the draft next year. I like that. All right, let me get you out of here on this. I'm liking this Ohio State basketball roster. I know this is near and dear to your heart. I mean, you love covering the football team too, but basketball, I always say I think you know more about Ohio State basketball than anybody I know.
Good Lord.
I'm liking this roster, Steve. I'm not saying they're going to be like a top 15 team. Hopefully they are. But I like this roster. It's clearly the best roster Diebler's had. I like the depth. I think they did a solid job in the portal, nothing crazy. I like the guys they retain, the guys they're bringing in. So I'm liking this roster. It seems like a complete roster to me.
Patrick Murphy and I have been able to go and watch at least a few of the practices with some drills, very limited 5-on-5 that we've got to see. And there is another observation window coming up on Thursday. I think Pat's going to hit that while I'm down here. So at any rate, I like what I've seen. I asked Justin Pippen like last week, are you the point guard? You know, are you and Junie Mobley kind of wrapped around the axle on titles and all that? And he's like, no, we're basically interchangeable. Pippen does view himself as a point guard, and he actually played very well at Cal last year. His numbers were really good, like 14 points, 4 or 5 rebounds, 4 or 5 assists, 2 steals. I mean, he was a really good player after not playing the year before at Michigan. So he's a guy that really is a key piece to this whole thing. And then you brought in productive transfers from other places with Givens, who averaged like 9 points a game at Memphis. Jimmy Williams averaged like 15 points a game at Duquesne. I know that's Atlantic 10. Andrea Yelovich came in from Kentucky, and he's going to be, in my mind, the backup power forward to Omari Bynum and the backup center to Josh Ojiyinwuna. And they've got depth at each position. So unlike past years when Christoph Tilley missed a game or Devin Royal missed a game and John Mobley missed a game and it was curtains, you know, no chance you go out to Iowa and get blown out, you know, without Christoph Tilley, then that's not going to happen this year. You're going to be competitive in every game because even if you're down a man or even two, you've got plenty of depth to cover the court. So getting LJ Smith to enroll early was huge. First time they've had two incoming freshmen, he and Anthony Thompson, in the top 30 in the recruiting rankings since, I think, Deshaun Thomas and Jared Sullinger, it would have been in 2010. So, yeah, I mean, that's 16 years ago. Boy, how time flies when we're not having fun, huh, Dave? So, yeah, it's time. It's time for Ohio State basketball to get back on the front page, and I think this team's going to be pretty good.
All right, I know you have a tea time at Augusta National.
Augusta National.
I'm actually
going to try and park my car by the gate and get a selfie with the sign if I can. I don't think they're going to let me on the property to walk Amen Corner today, which would be – I just want to see the goddamn place in person, you know. I just want to see it. You know, I'm never going to come to the tournament. You know, it's hard to get tickets. And, you know, you talk about people who've got a stick up their butt. You know, they won't let people sell their own tickets. You know, they won't let you transfer your tickets for money. I mean, how full of yourself are you? So,
yeah, well, thank you for getting up and doing this, despite the fact you're on the road. And I will see you when you get back, and can't wait to be in Chicago for media days. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it, bud.
Yep.
All right, have a good one. He is Mr. Steve Hellwagon. Good stuff. We talked a lot of football, threw in a little basketball there at the end. Just fitting since Steve is down there covering a basketball tournament. Pretty cool stuff. Yeah, I feel like, you know, one thing I really like about Diebler, a couple of things. He's a very good recruiter, and he's a good culture guy. And that's important. And he's brought in his lead assistant. Mike Wells is like, that's exactly what I wanted to see. He needed to bring in like a tactician, because he's not a good tactician, in my opinion. Maybe he'll get there. I don't think it's one of those things, you have it or you don't. I think, you know, he's a first-time head coach, you know, and that's interesting. I mean, Ryan Day as well. It's interesting. Ohio State typically should not be your first job as a head coach. You should work your way up to it. It's worked out great for Ryan Day, worked out great for us. And we'll see. We'll see. I think this is the year they're going to, when I say breakthrough, maybe have a chance to, you know, maybe get to the Sweet 16. I'm not going to put anything more on that, because I like this roster. And I think Diebler, he's a good culture guy, good, very good recruiter, excellent culture guy, excellent recruiter. And now he's got his tactician on his staff. So we'll see. I'm not like going over the moon on this basketball team, but I'll say I'm somewhat bullish on them this year. Definitely, I think they're going to be better than what they were last year. And they were solid last year. They made the tournament, almost won their first round game. Losing Bruce is going to hurt. I mean, I don't think we can't disrespect Bruce. He's looking good in the summer league. First pick of the second round, all-time leading scorer. But overall, I mean, I like this roster, though. I think Diebler has put together a very good roster, so we shall see. But Ward Manuel, we'll be on Ward Manuel watch. I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow there's some news on that. Doesn't sound like he's going to go down like without a fight, though. He's basically saying, like, you know, you're going to have to fire me and pay me my money. He signed through 2030. Now, it sounds like they could fire him with cause. If this Wall Street Journal report that I referenced earlier is correct, that there's evidence that he knew. This isn't just people saying, oh, Ward knew. They have a handwritten note that he said, I told Sharon he cannot bring her on the road. And it was in before Sharon's first game as head coach in 2024. And Ward's on the record saying he didn't know anything about this relationship with Sharon and Paige until 2025. Couple that with everything. That might be the straw that broke the camel's back right there. For Teflon Don, I still don't know how he survived this long. That might be the one where they're like, okay. And again, you guys have pointed this out, and I feel the exact same way. Like this close to $12 million investigation that they did, they hired an outside law firm. They're not going to do a written report. I mean, that's shady as hell. They're just going to do an oral report so there's no like paper trail. Like that is just, and as Steve said, I mean, if you're a taxpayer, if they're thinking, wait, why are we paying $12 million for this investigative report, and there's not going to be a written report? Like the whole thing just stinks to high heavens, but it's all right. You know, Ohio State's about ready to go on another long winning streak against the Wolverines, like the one we saw, you know, where they had a 7-game winning streak under Tress and then an 8-game winning streak under Urban. Or excuse me, it was 8 games for Tress, 7 for Urban. No, I had that right, because Urban was 7 of the 8. Tress won 7 in a row. Urban then won 7 after they got the 2011. Whatever, Luke Fickell, Jim Bowman year. 7 in a row. Then they won in the Michigan won in 2011, and then boom, 8 in a row, 7 for Urban, 1 for Ryan Day in his first year. So a little 7-game winning streak, little blip, 8-game winning streak. I say we get one of those going again. I already beat him in Ann Arbor last year, 27-9. I think Kyle Whittingham is a solid hire, but I think that was a good hire for, you know, to kind of right the ship a little bit. But I don't think he's going to be some like home run hire. I don't think he's going to beat Ohio State in the horseshoe this year. I think Ohio State's going to take it to him again this year. So we'll see. But, anyway, again, football's almost here, my friends. DGG next week. Big Ten Media Days in 2 weeks. And camp kicks off for the Buckeyes in 3 weeks. It's going to be here before we know it. All right, thanks to Steve. Thanks to all of you. I appreciate it very much. Hope everyone has a great rest of your day. Go Bucks.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mercury, radically different banking loved by over 300,000 entrepreneurs. You don't use floppy disks. You don't communicate by fax. You don't use outdated software to ship products. So why are you banking like you do? For ages, traditional banking has stood still, forcing people and businesses to adapt to its slow, clunky process. Mercury was designed to end that. It's radically different banking, fast, elegant, and it works the way you'd expect best-in-class software to work. You can accomplish just about anything in a couple of clicks. No fighting systems from the 1960s, in-person visits, or phone tag. And no nickel and diming. Because if you don't accept mediocre tools anywhere else in your work or life, why would you accept them for something as important as your money? Head to Mercury.com to apply in minutes and join over 300,000 founders who love Mercury. Mercury is a fintech company, not an FDIC insured bank. Banking services provided through Choice Financial Group and Column NA, members FDIC.